friends. I'm Lee Brown. This is Crazy Shit in Real Estate. Today, we're going to talk about wealth without Wall Street. That sounds good, doesn't it? That's right. I've got Joey Muir with us. Joey is a former loan officer who figured out how to get out of the hamster wheel and start investing in real estate in some really interesting spaces, including some questions he maybe should have asked first. And by the way, if you're a political junkie, this is totally your episode as well. So buckle up, enjoy it, and I'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate. You'll be amazed at all these wild but true situations that others have found themselves in. Because on this show, you'll hear uncensored, unbelievable stories from the world of real estate. I'm Lee Brown. Let's dive right in.
So tell me where you're located, Joey. Talk to me a little bit about how you landed in and around real estate. Give me some backstory.
So I'm in Birmingham, Alabama. So I'm a good Southern boy too, Lee. I love your accent. As I was listening to the show ahead of time, I was like, man, this is my kind of girl. And I was in the mortgage business right out of college and spent 11 years in the mortgage business. So a lot of my great friends were realtors. And then I started to realize that, like, financially, I wasn't getting ahead. I was making more and more income. And I thought that was a success. But then I realized that it wasn't really buying me more of my time, and my daughters were growing up and I was spending less and less time. It came apparent one day. I was taking my, I guess she was about three at the time, to her class, this little like preschool. And she was sitting in the background and she said, "Dad, you gonna pick me up from school today?" And I was like, "No, baby." It's kind of one of those, like, you know, I'm not gonna pick you up. Like, I'm too busy for that. Mom's gonna pick you up. She said, "Why are you not gonna pick me up?" I was like, "Because I have to work." And she said, "Well, why you have to work?" And I was like, "Well, because, I mean, I got to pay for this car. I got to pay for the house. You know, I got to pay for food." She said, "We already have a house. We already have a car." Like, it was just this simple little conversation. But what it did is it prompted in me is, like, I had to tell my daughter, I have to go to work. And it was because I didn't have any passive income.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the one thing, but that's been an anchor in the back of my mind that I needed to get to a point where there's passive income covering my expenses that buys back my freedom. So that's where my business partner, Russ, and I started Wealth Without Wall Street in 2016. And we've been on the path of doing that as personally and then sharing that path with others ever since. And as you can imagine, a lot of those passive income streams we've built over the years have a lot to do with real estate, and I'm happy to share any or all of them. So,
well, I mean, there's 1,000 different pathways to go down in real estate, and unfortunately, so many practitioners land exactly where you landed. They get good at writing loans. They get good at writing offers. They can list a house. They make money, and then you get a bad market. And it's gone because they didn't look at a big picture plan for what to do with that money besides fall into the ego trap of real estate, which is fancier cars and bigger houses and billboards and all of those vanity marketing things that look good, don't sustain you long term. And then I've got to tell you, like, I talk to realtors when I'm doing training classes around the country, the old guard look at these early career folks and say, "For all that's holy, don't give up your kids for this business," because it's such an easy trap to fall into, because you think you need that stuff and you don't need that stuff. You need time with those little people because they're amazing and the time goes like that. And I say this as two teenagers, and I love hanging out with my teenagers. And so this afternoon, like, everything's blocked out so that when they get home from school, we can go outside and work in the garden and play with the chickens so that we can do real things together that have nothing to do with work. So I'm really glad for the timing on this because, of course, the market's been on fire.
Yes.
And a lot of people are making money. They don't know what to do with it. A lot of people are not making a lot of money because the market is restricted right now. But when they make something, they'd like to have something for a rainy day. So talk to me about where you started. So you saw the need for the passive income. Did you start with single family investments? Did you start the stock market? Where did you go first to start getting the plan in place? Because obviously friends, you don't have to go big out of the gate. There's lots of ways to get going in real estate.
I will say this. You don't have to be great. You have to start to be great. That's the key point, right? And I will say I didn't do things right from day one. For me, the natural first step for me was private lending. Because, you know, you spend all this time, these years, looking at people's applications, and you start saying, I know what a good loan looks like, right? So then when I got out and I had people come to me and say, hey, this person doesn't really fit the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac guidelines, but they're a great person. They're a good loan opportunity. I was like, man, yeah, I'll do that loan all day long. And I had some cash, I had some capital because I started putting money into a place that I could access it and I could take control and make some investments from. And so, man, I did a couple of private loans right out of the gate at 10% interest on 15-year mortgages for people that were putting 20% down on their primary residence. I was like, this is a golden loan. And there are houses that I would move into personally. I could go and I could touch it, feel it, see it. And that was a great opportunity for me. But what I found is it wasn't moving fast enough for me, right? When I say I made some mistakes along the way, it was a good thing. It just wasn't great for me as an investor. And Lee, I'll tell you, part of our process that we've learned over the years is that the investment is not as important as the investor, right? If you do an investment that has a great return, but it's not something that really resonates with who you are as a person, like who God's really made you to be and what gets you fired up and excited about, then it's not going to be sustainable at best, but at worst, it could delay your ability to get to financial freedom. And so we developed an investor DNA profile to help people figure out, who am I? Like, what do I love to do? What am I gifted in? Where are some potential weaknesses that I need to overcome with either partnerships or knowledge or expertise? And then align those things with some passive income ideas that really match up with that person, because that's what's going to be your rocket ship to get to financial freedom as fast as possible. And that's what we're passionate about.
Okay, so I have to show you something, because you talk about that investor DNA, because risk and reward, right? So low risk, you're not going to go anywhere, but you'll be fine. And fewer people are willing to take the highest risk, but that's where the tallest returns are. And so I have to ask people, I'm like, are you low risk and you're fine? Or are you high risk and you want more money?
I get that. But here's my other thing I'll add is the person that's aligned with what they really are passionate about and what they're really good at, that reduces risk.
Well, and they'll take more risks because they do have more comfort in that space. Absolutely.
Exactly.
Look to like how they're wired. Engineers, for example, in an earlier episode, I was talking with another realtor in Alabama about this, how engineers are an easy risk because they're not wired to let their credit go bad. They're not wired to let things go sideways. So if they don't fit that profile on your top level, but you're paying attention to all of those attributes like you're talking about, you would take a chance on an engineer all day long. They won't take chances, but you would. Which is funny, right? Like Kenny and Freddie should have a rule that says, if you're an engineer, we always give you a loan because you've been in your job 5 minutes. We know you're not going anywhere.
That's great.
So talk about that investor DNA a little bit. How did you design it? Was it based on anecdotal information? Did you do some research, hire a college intern? What was the plan on that?
So we had a consultant that we worked with personally, and he had a relationship with the people that developed the DISC profile.
Oh, nice.
And we were familiar with it, but we didn't realize that you could kind of contact them and then give them some insight into what your business was like, and they would kind of tailor the DISC profile to your business. And so to our knowledge, this is one of the only ones that's out there that has to do with like how you see the world of finance. And we contacted this group, People Keys, I think is the name of the group that's behind it. And they just helped us to identify like, okay, if you're a high D personality, let's say you want to move fast, right? You don't want something that's going to be slow and steady, and you want to take a little bit more risk. You want something that's a little bit more flashy, a little bit more, kind of gives you a little bit of bravado to be able to talk about this particular investment that you're involved with. Whereas that's the opposite of that person that's like an S profile on the disc, you know, that they want something slow, steady. They're highly relational, highly loyal. They don't really want a bunch of pressure on them to perform in terms of like the investment itself. So they're going to be attracted to more things like turnkey real estate, right? Buying a tried and true long-term kind of slow and steady wins the race type of deal. Whereas that high D personality, like my business partner, he's gotten me into short-term rentals because I'm higher S, he's a higher D. And so when we partner together, we actually make a really good team to put together. You know, we've scaled a short-term rental business from one unit to we're up to 28 now, not even quite 2 years in. And that's been a really exciting thing for us to do passively. But again, other people may not, you know, jive well with that, with their investor DNA.
So has your program been updated and modified since the world went crazy 2 years ago with the COVID era, and which has obviously changed a lot of our financial parameters with the printing of money that has flooded our financial system and caused this insane inflation, which is not transitory and is not slowing down anytime soon. So have you adapted that investor DNA to help people think differently and to think more long-term about what's coming in the markets?
So what we base the investor DNA off of, we couple it with a passive income matrix, right? So you get your profile and then you hold it up against the different types of investment strategies that we have personally been involved in. And so it's everything from land flipping to short-term rentals to long-term rentals and private lending to syndications, things along all those different characteristics. And then looking at those things, what are the pros? What are the cons for the high D, right? What's the pros and the cons for the I personality under each one of those things? As far as updating those, we haven't seen a major shift in terms of the actual strategies themselves. In fact, just as an aside, we didn't start the short-term rental business until the middle of May or June of 2020. Right in the middle of COVID, we started the business. And to be honest, it actually took off because hotels and everything were shut down. And so it actually became highly, highly more profitable for us as a result.
Good timing. I mean, way to plan that.
We were scared to death, but it worked out.
Hey, y'all. Just going to take a quick break from this conversation to let you know about the sponsor of today's episode. That sponsor is, well, frankly, it's me. It's Lee Brown University. It's no secret that real estate is crazy competitive, getting more so every day. And that's why I created Lee Brown University. Each of you has different goals. There's something in my course that's going to help you break through. So enroll in Lee Brown University today. You go to www.leebrownu.com and I'll see you there. Now, back to this amazing content. So when you're buying those short-term rentals, I'm just going to take a little detour on that. Are you paying close attention to the local municipality as far as their regulatory environment and if they are looking to shut those down? Because that's a huge issue occurring across the real estate space. Yes. And it's wildly different based on the elected officials and what they hear from the one grumpy person who shows up at city council or county commission meeting. Because friends, y'all better understand something. Most of your policies are driven by that one angry person who shows up at city council or county commission and yells every month. And if not that person, then their cousin who's on Twitter yelling about things. Our elected officials own the balance. Are not thinking about all of you who keep your mouth shut. They're only trying to shut up the person in front of them, which is how we get bad policies. So just yes. Saying. Anyway, back to the regulatory situation around short-term rentals, because I find it to be fascinating that people fight them when they are such an elegant solution to so many segments of the marketplace.
Yes. So 2 points about that. Number one, we have gone down the path of using rental arbitrage where we are renting, let's say, an apartment unit, going and turning around and putting it, like furnishing it, and then putting it on the short-term rental market and making the difference between what we're paying in rent and what they're paying us on the short term. And it's been highly profitable in an inflated market. Okay. However, it's funny that you're bringing up this whole regulatory issue. We thought we were doing a great job of that over the last 18 to 24 months. And we did, we built all of our portfolio easily, you know, staying within the lines of these municipalities. We went outside of the lines into a new municipality and purchased our first one. And it was going to be a luxury kind of event venue space that we were going to convert. It was a house that we're going to convert into being a corporate retreat that we'd experienced one in Nashville. And we thought, this needs to come to Birmingham. We need to do this. And just so happened, there was a house for sale and my business partner's neighbor was selling it. And we were like, oh, off market deal. It wasn't on the market. So we went to them and we worked out a deal to take over their mortgage payments, like a subject to type of deal. This was working beautifully. I mean, so amazing. We closed on the deal and this is $1.3 million house. Okay. And we're like, we're taking a plunge here. Sure. We go and the neighbors start throwing a fit. It's on 8 acres. I mean, this is not like everybody's really close together, but they start throwing a fit. We go to the city and we say, you know what? Let's just go and meet with these guys. Because if you look at the covenants and restrictions in the county or city code, there's nothing against short-term rentals. In fact, they referenced something about bed and breakfast, which of course, this is not a bed and breakfast. It's just a residence that's being rented on a shorter term basis than a 12-month lease. That's really all this is.
Chick-fil-A bring chicken minis over. Chick-fil-A brings chicken minis. It can be a bed and breakfast, right?
That's right. Exactly. But so we go to them and say, okay, we just want to let y'all know what our game plan is. We've heard that some, you know, hubbub from the neighbors. And this will tell you exactly what you said. The mayor of that little municipality literally was out on a vendetta against anybody thinking there were short-term rentals. While, by the way, there was 10 short-term rentals in his city on Airbnb. So we did our homework ahead of time. We saw that there was active listings currently and nothing in the code that said it wouldn't happen. And we sat down with him and he said, well, I'll tell you what, this falls under the premise that you can't run a business out of your house. And we said, well, sir, Airbnb, there's case law in the state of Alabama that says that an Airbnb is not a business. Mm-hmm. It's case law. He said, well, I Googled it and said it was. It was a business. Cool. And I said, sir, respectfully, I would take case law over Google. What you Googled. And the little council guy was sitting over there. He kind of started snickering. But the point was, Lee, we went down that path. We thought we had a great idea, a good business plan. Everything was set. And one guy could basically turn that whole thing. We had to turn it on, put it on the market, and we're in the process of selling it now. But it is a potential risk. The way these municipalities operate is they can shut you down.
Well, and it's an ongoing risk too. And I think people have to remember that as they look at short-term rentals, they absolutely bring the cash flow, but you have got to be engaged because the things could change at any time. A mayor like that sees one TikTok about a frat party that happened in an Airbnb. And now in his head, every Airbnb is frat parties all the time and thousands of cars. And it's like in 16 Candles with that party at one house. That's what they're envisioning because they use the internet incorrectly. Google is not a good resource. But then again, where are you going to get current information? You go down to City Hall and ask for it because, oh my gosh, it's upend your whole strategy.
Yeah. Often, that's what we learned is we should have asked them ahead of time versus just assuming that what was in writing was actually going to be upheld.
And by the way, viewers and listeners, if you've had a similar issue, there are actually advocacy lobbyists that work for Airbnb, and they will help you if you wind up in a tangle with a municipality because they have, as a company, a vested interest in protecting the property rights that you can do these things. So just FYI. But on that note, obviously, the corporate retreat thing is a growing market as companies have so many work from home people and they're seeking ways to create an in-person environment so that people can build that camaraderie and the creativity that comes from being with other humans. Are you going to try this in another marketplace when your money comes out of this particular house?
Yeah, that's our goal. I mean, literally, we spent, I want to say $10,000 on one retreat that was two nights at a place, this fantastic, you know, kind of plantation home in Nashville. And we were like, it was a no-brainer for us. We slept like 20 people on site and had meeting space there and a pool. And it was really nice. We thought, this is a, we got to do this here in Birmingham. And so it is still something we want to pursue for sure.
Well, there we go. All right. So obviously we're kind of rambling here, but that's my favorite kind of episode. The show is, of course, Crazy Shit in Real Estate. And my viewers and listeners like to hear the what kind of stories. So it could be from your mortgage days. It could be from being a loan shark days. It could, or hard money lender, whatever. So it could also be from your investment pathway that you've been on now since 2016. So if I were to say, Joey, what is the craziest thing you've ever encountered in the real estate space? What would you tell me?
Well, I will say this. That story I just shared with you is probably the craziest because I'm sitting there with Barney Fife, mayor, and I'm trying not to strangle this guy because it was absurd. There was no logic in the room, Lee. Literally.
Benny, this is the real estate version of my cousin Benny. That's what you were dealing with.
Exactly. I'm sitting there. I backed him into a corner, which he didn't like. I said, well, you guys allow for a 12-month lease on properties, right? He said, yeah, you have to have a business license. I said, okay, that's kind of weird, but whatever. A business license is fine. I said, well, what if they said, I'm only going to rent it for 6 months? Would you be okay with that? Well, sure. Yeah. Yeah. I said, well, what about if it was 3 months? And the guy said, well, that's just perception. I said, no, sir. It's a shorter term than a 12-month lease. I don't understand what we're talking about here. Like, this is not a business. We're renting a property on a shorter term basis. And literally the guy is just shutting down. You know, first of all, he comes in the room and he's like, y'all sure have stirred a pot, haven't you? And I was like, oh my goodness.
You did.
What am I doing here? So it is the craziest thing I've had to sit through in real estate. And that may be a little anticlimactic since we already talked about it, but it is what it is.
Hey friends, it's still a story. I thought you might have had something else crazy though, because it was just organic. So I like how you just led organically into the story. But I mean, it does give us our cautionary tale on the other end, which is ask more questions and also stay engaged with local politics. And I'm always amazed by the number of people who do real estate either as a profession or as an investment strategy, and they are divorced from politics. You don't have that luxury because this is the place that elected officials come for permit fees and zoning changes and property tax increases and all the pots of money that go along with real estate. And you have to pay attention to it, especially if it's your passive income. So outside of Airbnbs and your new corporate venture, what is your favorite passive income strategy in real estate?
My favorite is one that we started also a couple of years ago. It's a land flipping business.
Okay.
And I want to say that you had my friend Mark Podolsky on your show at some point in the past, but he is the land geek. And man, we hired his group to start a land business for us.
Nice.
And we put all the money behind it. And we're a 70% partner in the deal. And so every single month that passive income comes in. Just so if people aren't familiar, they buy raw land at about 25 cents on the dollar, and they have their means of doing that. They mail out to people and they get them for a discount. They turn around and sell them on places like Facebook Marketplace, Landmodo.com, various different online engines and on retail prices with a monthly payment. So for instance, you know, someone really wants to own land, but they don't have $40,000 in cash. Well, they can turn around and finance that from a land geek, somebody that works with us, and pay them $400 a month, let's say, because they were able to purchase that property for $10,000. If that makes sense. So they've made their spread, so to speak, and they just put it on a note for 6, 7, 8 years. Well, we've done this over and over and over again since June of, I guess it was 2020 also. And we're just cresting $21,000 a month in passive income from this one vehicle. And man, I tell you, it's exciting to me because it's there's not a whole lot of municipality issues in that, right? Nobody's going to come and shut us down on buying and selling land.
Right.
It's not hard to maintain. It's literally raw land. So there's no structures. There's no toilets, tenants, or termites, as Mark says. And it's an automatic thing. People are paying automatically. So, and if they stop paying, it's not like a foreclosure process. It's just a land contract that we take back and we resell it with a lower basis. And it's just been a brilliant strategy. And it's, again, it's very steady. So, you know, I'm a steady kind of guy.
That means you're going to fall in one of the midline things here.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. So if anybody wants to reach out to you, Joey, let's say they're a lender or a realtor who wants to get their money into a more productive and consistent stream, or they're a regular person out there who says, I'd like to do more passive investing myself. How is the best way for them to reach you?
I'll tell you this. The best way to get started with us is contact us, wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/passport. And that's a free course along with our community of over 5,500 people who are on the same path. So you go there, you join the community, you can download the app for free, but then you get this course that helps you start to dream about what financial freedom would look like for you. And once you do that, now you got a lot more clarity on what types of investment vehicles you need to start employing. And our coaches are there to help along the way. So we'd love to connect with you there.
All right, friends, all of the clicks are in the show notes for this episode. So you can access all the links and go get plugged in. And remember that a community is stronger when you're there if you participate. So it's a place where you can ask your questions and then you can invite somebody else to join you there as well, because we're always looking for other smart people to surround ourselves with. Joey, I appreciate you coming on the show and sharing with us a lot of different angles and things to consider as we put together better plans for real estate in the future.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And guys, if you want to access any of those earlier episodes, click on the link here, click subscribe, hit the bell, say nice things about Joey down here in the comments, and do not ask the name of that mayor because he won't tell. That would be ugly, not ugly over here. But most importantly, make sure that you've subscribed so you can come back and hear some more on Crazy Shit. We'll see you next time.
As always, I'm so super thrilled that you joined in for more Crazy Shit. And if you're a realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular human being who happens to have an unbelievable story that you need to tell the world about, or frankly, you just need to one up the story you just heard, then make sure to DM me on Instagram at Lee Thomas Brown, or tweet me at Lee Brown, or frankly, any social network where you hang out, I'm there. And if you had some fun, then you totally won't just subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes.